your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond. Welcome back to another episode of Alchemy. Joining me today, Aristotle Loomis, co-founder and chief of staff at Philo, and Jeff Cantalupo, founder and managing partner at Listen Ventures. Guys, really great to have you on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. Excited to be here.
Jeff, first off, I love some of the investments that you guys have made at Listen. And I thought it'd be nice just if you can give us a little bit of background, you know, on business, your approach, and obviously you guys have such a diverse portfolio. I'd love to kind of bring that to life for a lot of the folks that are tuning in now.
Sure thing, Jeff. You know, quick high level is, you know, my background is not traditional, what you would expect to find someone in venture capital. And so I actually grew up in the world of brand and marketing and advertising. And fast forward that to bringing that perspective to the investment space. At Listen, we invest only in consumer brands and with a consumer lens on everything that we do. And so, you know, our brand alone, Listen, is about the idea that to build a great consumer business, you have to listen and bring the consumer voice to the table. And so what we look for are predominantly two different types of businesses. One are businesses that are kind of at the forefront of a changing consumer behavior and culture that is actually going to create a new industry and is going to need brands to kind of help lead the narrative around that industry. And then the other type of business that we look for are entrepreneurs that are rethinking the experience of an existing industry, but doing it really with an audience first and consumer first mindset. And so, you know, bringing the consumer to the table to kind of build the business with them versus market the business at them.
I think one thing that caught my attention like immediately, and something that Aristotle knows just very well, but I'm a huge fisherman. And just to see something on your roster, you know, in the sport fishing world, I got really excited. So we could talk more about that offline, but I was like, okay, plus one already.
That's great.
I do have a question for you, Jeff, as Aristotle chiming in. Speaking of listening, I know that you have quite the pedigree from your 10 years at Leo Burnett. You manage Pop-Tarts or Frosted Flakes for Kellogg's. Would you mind sharing any memories on the best campaigns that you and your team executed during your time?
Sure. You know, I think that I have a lot of great memories. I spent, you know, the majority of my time actually at Leo Burnett, I spent on the Philip Morris business. And so I'll get in a little bit more around what I learned there and how it applies to the industry you guys operate in. But one of my favorite campaigns we ever worked on was for a global brand in the Philip Morris International portfolio called Chesterfield, which is one of the oldest cigarette brands in the world. And the idea was in the early 2000s when we thought the world was speeding up. And, you know, in hindsight, it has only continued to speed up. But the construct was this idea that, you know, true pleasures and true quality is best enjoyed slowly. And I think the reason I liked that campaign was because it was about taking a pause during the chaos that was ensuing around the always-on society. And I think that that insight we had on that campaign is as relevant or more relevant today than it was even back then. So I always take fond memories of my experience at Leo Burnett on campaigns that were driven around kind of deep cultural insights. And that was one of them.
That's awesome. And, you know, we were chatting a little bit before the show too. And, you know, aside from your kind of deep background and experience, you know, in the advertising world, you're also, you know, a branding guy and now obviously would listen in the venture capital side, but you're also a teacher. And, you know, you're teaching at the Kellogg School of Management and you really focus on startup branding. So, you know, talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's really an experience that I've gotten really excited about. We just launched our inaugural class this last quarter at Kellogg. And I really got into this because of my partner at Listen. So my partner, Rick Desai at Listen, began adjunct teaching at Kellogg about 3.5 years ago. And he teaches a class called New Venture Development. And his class, in order to take his class, you have to be working on a business with some of your other business school students. And He takes you through a 12-week course on validating that business idea and all the way through launch and the KPIs that you should be thinking about when you're building an entrepreneurial business. And one of the segments within that 12-week class, he used to invite us in. So the rest of the team at Listen, and we would go in and talk about how to use brand as a lens to build your startup. And that class got a lot of great feedback from the students. And so working with faculty at Kellogg, we decided to launch it into its own class. And I began teaching it this last quarter. So really fun startup branding. It's really about how to think about using brand as the lens to build business and what it means to build a brand from scratch, which is the most exciting thing about, I think, entrepreneurial space.
Yeah, I love that. And I think also a lot of folks who are in the VC world that don't really come from that, you know, advertising / branding world is hard to teach that. So the fact that you're coming with both is a really nice must have, in my opinion.
Speaking of teaching, well, shout out to Rick. He's quite a, we have some fans at Philo. I'm sure you're familiar with AG Ready or CFO, former roommate of Rick. So hello to Rick. But speaking about teaching, how do you take that methodology and actually apply it to your wide range of ventures? I know that you're an investor in Calm all the way to Miss Grass. So would you be able to kind of give us kind of under the hood look of how you take those teachings and apply it to your investments?
Yeah, sure. I think it all starts internally with how we look at the world. And so, we, in our view, brand isn't, it's not about a brand strategy. We believe brand is strategy if executed correctly. And so what we look for in the world are, opportunities and culture and changing behavior for entrepreneurs that are building brands or the opportunity to build brands against those behavior shifts in a way that's going to lead the conversation with consumers. And so that transpires into, our diligence process and trying to determine which entrepreneurs are truly building the business with the consumer at the table and where the insight for starting the company began and how they think about leveraging the voice of the customer through the decisions that they make. And it goes all the way through post-investment, how we think about being a value-added resource as they continue to evolve the brand through time. And so, our investment thesis and our approach at Listen is unique in the venture capital space in the sense that in addition to capital, we also have capabilities and we have a team of people that go beyond the traditional experts at investing and banking backgrounds, but we employ folks that have backgrounds in creative and design and consumer insights as well. And so we think that qualitative and quantitative and creative viewpoint and expertise that Listen has as a team can be helpful at solving problems in a wide variety of places for our entrepreneurs and their businesses.
So, I think we were both pretty excited, to talk to you, not just about your diverse portfolio, but also, starting to invest in the cannabis space. So, would love for you to talk a little bit about, Miss Grass and, what was it that really got you involved in the beginning of kind of dipping your toes in this pretty amazing world?
So I guess I'll start back with what I mentioned earlier about Leo Burnett. I worked on the Philip Morris business for a significant period of time. And so I have a unique background, I think, in terms of working in a regulated industry. And within that, I actually was fortunate to spearhead an initiative inside Leo to help Philip Morris think about innovation beyond cigarettes. That experience has actually just opened my eyes to the world of operating within a regulated market, but trying to be innovative. And so that a lot of what I took from that experience is what led me to wanting to start Listen to begin with. And so I'd always been really curious as to how the cannabis industry would evolve. And about 4.5 years ago, I started meeting, some really interesting entrepreneurs. And we're fortunate in Chicago to have some of what I think are, the biggest pioneers in the space, whether it be, the folks at Cresco or GTI, that kind of early to setting up shop. And I met with some of those folks and had a lot of conversations around it. with the excitement that one day we wanted to make investments in it. And what I came away with was, you know, our viewpoint and our thesis is to invest in brands. And at that time, it was really the infrastructure building of the industry that was happening. And so while the MSOs that were started and getting built, my purview was that it was going to take a while until brand became the priority within the space, and largely because the infrastructure needed to be there for, you know, consumers to have the ability to actually connect with brands. And so fast forward, you know, in hindsight of not making some investments that I probably should have. but we were really looking and trying to understand when the industry was going to get to a point where brand was going to be prioritized and entrepreneurs were going to be really thinking about how brand will drive the future of the industry. And so my viewpoint on that, Jeff and Aristotle, has always been that in the long run, brand will drive the enterprise value in this space, even though in the short run, footprint and, you know, other operational expertise has actually been what's created value to date.
That's awesome. So Jeff, talk to us a little bit about your investment in Miss Grass.
Yeah, sure. The hardest thing to do in the consumer world is to aggregate an audience that cares about a brand's perspective beyond their product. And so our view when we met, you know, Kate and Anna, the founders of Miss Grass, was they were building a truly authentic community around a voice in cannabis for women. And, you know, helping women navigate the space and learn about it through education and having a point of view and perspective on the cannabis industry was largely what drew us to that as an investment, as well as a platform that we think is going to be positioned well to build a brand in this space over time.
It seems that, you know, obviously there's no doubt that the cannabis industry is booming right now, right? Especially amidst the COVID and going from emerging to essential. And you've always been a pioneer. And so can you speak a little bit about the venture community that hasn't dipped their toes into the cannabis space and what you currently see is unfolding?
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, the complicated aspect from a venture standpoint in cannabis is just the fact that it's federally illegal. So, you know, a lot of funds, whether they would want to invest in it or not, are timid, largely because likely a number of their LPs are not comfortable with them making bets in this space that is federally illegal. So I think that has a lot of play into it. But that's also what's created the opportunity for specific funds to emerge against this category, which I think in an emerging industry that has so many different, you know, challenges and regulatory aspects to it, I do think domain expertise here is helpful. And the folks that have created some of those early funds focused specifically on this industry, I think, have benefited, but are also some of the smartest people in this space and how it's going to evolve. So I think that that's kind of why you've seen, you know, different perspectives from traditional venture firms on the industry than you would in typically when another emerging industry happens and they're super excited to dip their toe.
I would say there's a lot of things that are starting to take shape in the future of the space. So I think one, you know, banking regulations possibly easing. And then, you know, also with, as Aristotle was saying, with COVID-19 and the pandemic the last couple of months, you know, you see stories every single day hitting the news, right? Cannabis is essential, cannabis deemed essential, cannabis is essential. And, you know, a lot of the states where it might not be legal yet, and, you know, maybe there's medical programs and not rec, you know, they're starting to say, hey, we really need to start lining the coffers with tax dollars. And cannabis seems to be the next big thing for us because, you know, states are really low on funds. So I think one thing that we're going to start seeing is, you know, a rapid advancement of cannabis. Kind of, yes, we have our normal Colorado, Illinois, California, Washington state, but more and more states coming forward. Do you think that there's going to be more venture capital folks starting to say, okay, you know what, this is moving more towards a, you know, federally acceptable, you know, business? Will they kind of start, you know, putting more dollars in, or are they going to wait until it really is a federal mandate?
I think there'll be some of them that do get more comfortable with it. And a lot of that, I think, is being driven by different aspects of the plant. You know, I've been, you know, following the CBD craze from a consumer perspective, obviously, since it started. And you've started to see some, you know, what I would say traditional VC firms that likely 3 years ago wouldn't have participated in cannabis make bets on CBD only brands. And so I think all of this, you know, these steps forward from a regulatory environment standpoint will get people more and more comfortable with it. And I think the more and more the science around the plant comes out with regards to the impact that it can have on different types of use cases, people will get more and more comfortable with it. And so, you know, I think it's an evolving thing from an investment perspective. But, you know, to date, there hasn't been too much of difficulty from you know, early movers to secure capital, because there was enough creative capital starting to be formed around the industry specifically.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that was pretty prevalent to me, aside from the capital side, is that coming from our world, and, you know, I mean, the agency and brand world, there has been a huge inflection point, I'd say probably in the last 6 to 9 months pre-pandemic, of marketers who are literally like at Unilever and P&G and, you know, the biggest of the biggest CPG brands all moving to cannabis. And that's got to be a sure signal too to the venture community, like, wow, the marketing world has seen this, and the marketing world is actually, they're finally making that transition. Cause, you know, there was a lot of stigma before, and now it's kind of evaporated, that this space is, it's written right on the wall, like, this is going to explode. If not, it's exploding already.
That's right. And I think, you know, to go back to one of your earlier questions, I think that's largely what excites us about the future of building brands in the category, which is, you know, whenever you're dealing with stigma, there's an opportunity to win with brand, because it largely comes down to building trust through education. And so, you know, I think that the more and more people that are coming into this industry that, quote unquote, are perceived to come from major players in other industries like CPG, that just the more credibility that it brings. But I also think people are having their own personal experiences with the plant that are making them rethink a lot of the stigma that wider audiences have towards it. And so there's a number of movements, I think, taking place with regards to people opening up their eyes to, one, just how impactful this plant can be on people's lives. And two, the unique aspect around this plant is how many different products it's going to find its way into, right? So, you know, the people coming from the beauty industry or the traditional CPG industry, et cetera, I find it fascinating, because we're going to see, you know, this is an industry that is built off of, you know, the cannabis plant, but the ingredients from the cannabis plant are going to find themselves in everything from skincare to beauty to beverage to, you know, recreational to medical uses. And so you're talking about, you know, the permeation of this business into multiple multi $100 billion industries. And that's what I think is getting a lot of people excited about where this goes.
So on that point, Jeff, I think, you know, kind of changing gears here, and I think you've already kind of touched on this, is that at your core, you're a branding and marketing guy. How do you think the branding, and you're talking about education, you're talking about the different use cases for the plant, how do you think that is going to be leveraged in the branding, and how that will evolve the cannabis space as a whole? And do you think that that's something that is going to be still a little more work, a little down the line? Or do you think we're looking at this in the next 1 or 2 years that you'll really start to see kind of the mainstream-esque of the industry itself?
Well, the short answer is I think it's really hard to build a brand in this space today. And I think what we've seen to date, I think there's a lot of good product companies, and I think there's still a lot to be done in terms of building a brand. And that's largely because, quite honestly, the industry has every constraint you can possibly think of in terms of what you would traditionally want to build a national brand, right? It's got state by state regulations, which impact your ability to build your brand outside of where you started, as well as it impacts the consistency you can have for the product that you create when you do expand mm-hmm. to other states. It has advertising regulations in terms of how you can or can't communicate with your consumer base. It has a lot of restrictions in terms of what you typically need to scale the awareness of a brand. That being said, the appetite from consumers to want to learn about this plant is what lends itself to brands building trust and building content that is going to allow them to build a true relationship beyond the transaction of a product. And so there's a lot to get excited about the opportunity to build brands, but there's of course a lot of hurdles that are going to be in front of companies over the next kind of 2 to 10 years in terms of building what would traditionally be thought of as the components you need to have a truly scalable brand.
Yeah, I think you're right there. And I think, you know, one of the biggest challenges today is, you know, if you buy a product in Colorado and you're, let's say then in New York and you want to get that product again, you can't, right? So I think having availability of product that you've grown to like and enjoy, you really need to have it everywhere so you could find it. So that's definitely, you know, an issue. I would say from a cannabis space in particular, and you being in Chicago, obviously you're exposed to a lot of these pretty amazing MSOs that are doing a pretty bang up job on getting product out there and creating loyalty. Anything that you are looking at, even from a consumer perspective, that you think will, you know, dominate and disrupt the space, or are we not there yet?
I guess I can't point to anything specific. I mean, I think there's some brands out there in the world in different markets that have done a good job. You know, one that I'll point to is, you know, Old Pal. I think Old Pal is, you know, is a brand that I think has done a couple things well. One, it really understands the consumer it's going after and has done a pretty good job at building that into a community that likes the brand beyond the product. The other thing is I think that they chose a positioning and price point strategy that lends itself to where the business is currently at today, which is more on the volume consumer. And so, you know, from that standpoint, in terms of building a healthy community of consumers that like the brand beyond the product, as well as the consumer base that can actually drive a business model that works, I think they've done a great job. You know, a couple other brands that I'll mention, I think that have done some interesting things are brands like Sunday Goods, and, you know, Dosist, I think from a more kind of medicinal standpoint has done a good job at communication and messaging and design. But, you know, because of the category and the way it's evolved, you know, if you talk to people around the country, most people don't know those brands. And so there's a long way to go in terms of just the overall awareness factor that you need to build a larger brand from a community standpoint. But I do think the opportunity exists. And I largely point to, you know, craft beer in the sense that a lot of great craft beer brands were built in local communities and for a long time didn't expand distribution. And people sought out to experience them when they traveled or they wanted to bring that product back with them or however that might work.
Spotted Cow.
Yeah, they were built for a reason, right? And in a certain community with the certain type of passion that consumer base had.
Yep. As I just said, Spotted Cow, I know when we go to over the border in Wisconsin, people like to stock up. So I know that example pretty intimately. My next question is actually, I'm going to take it back to something that I'm pretty intimate with. As you both know, and I spent the better half of the last decade building an international brand, spent about 4 or 5 years in Greece, bringing that here. And Jeff, I know that you have a similar background. You spent a good amount of time in your career abroad. And you're also an expert at maintaining global brand consistency and relevancy. How do you think global cannabis expansion will impact how we approach marketing?
It's interesting. I think it's going to largely depend on how global cannabis gets created and some of the pioneer brands that determine to take a brand-led approach to expansion versus some international organizations coming into new markets through acquisition. And so, you know, I think it's interesting when you think about some of the acquisitions that have taken place from international brands into the U.S. market, like, you know, Lord Jones, for instance. You know, it's an interesting play. And I think, and maybe I'm biased, I'm likely biased. I think all investors are biased to their viewpoints. But my thesis on the way the market will ultimately develop is that the MSOs and the holding companies, if you will, of this industry will eventually have to operate beyond a footprint strategy and a vertical integrated strategy. They're going to have to operate a brand portfolio strategy that is really thoughtful into the way the consumer segmentation of this market will develop. And so, you know, they'll largely do that through their own brand development, but likely through acquisition of entrepreneurs that have a unique insight against a certain market segment and build a great brand to that. And so I don't think it's going to look very different at scale than a Philip Morris does, right? With Marlboro and Parliament, Virginia Slims and Basic cigarettes, all serving different consumer sets, or a Diageo in terms of the way that they think about their spirits portfolio management at price point, as well as consumer segmentation strategy. And so I think that will eventually happen. How long it takes to get there, I don't know. And I think that's actually what has, at least from my outside perspective, impacted the speed to the prioritization of brand within the category.
Awesome. Well, that was really great insight. And, you know, Jeff, I think it's been a treat to have you on today and really go deep into your expertise and, you know, the pulse of what's going on in the cannabis space. You know, if you've listened to the show before, you know, we talk a little bit about business in the beginning, and then we have a couple of quick fire questions for you at the end. Are you ready?
Sure. Let's go.
Okay. First question. What's the best thing that happened to you this month?
This month. Okay. The end of homeschool.
Speaking of homeschool, if you could teach any subject in school, what would it be?
Branding, marketing.
How do you start your day?
Cup of coffee.
How do you manage stress?
I try to meditate.
Calm.
I was going to say, do you use calm?
Plug. I'm not only an investor, I'm also a client.
We've heard that line before, right? what's the first thing that you notice about someone when you meet them?
Their shoes.
Good answer.
I'm kind of a sneakerhead, so I usually check out shoes.
Well, that's probably good to know when you actually start meeting some folks that you're going to be investing. If they listen to this podcast, they know to wear sneakers, right?
Yeah.
Well, Jeff, listen, thanks for joining us today. And again, great insight. We really enjoyed the chat, and it's great to hear more about, you know, the things that you love too. So thanks again.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.